The following is a presentation of the American College of Osteopathic Internists.
Welcome to this recording of the American College of Osteopathic Internists Internal Medicine Board Review Course. The course was held in Baltimore at the Marriott Waterfront Hotel on May 8th through 12th, 2019. The course featured nationally known speakers covering a wide variety of topics of importance to the internist preparing for initial certification or for recertification in the specialty of internal medicine. Asthma is presented by Dr. Jonathan Horball.
They asked me to talk about asthma today, which will absolutely 100% be on the board. So I kind of pulled the guidelines apart, and we're going to kind of run through what the guidelines say, why they say what they say, and go through a couple cases to show you kind of probably what's going to be there. So disclosures, no relevant disclosures. Objectives, again, we're just going to kind of go through all this and get you ready to take the boards and get you through asthma. So just a pathogenesis, there are questions. So I would go through and review basic interleukin materials before you go in. There have been questions in the past that I've seen where there's been things, you know, what does this interleukin do? What causes a fever? What does this? And it's just a blatant question. It's either there or you don't know. So I would review those before you go in. But the interleukins associated with asthma are as follows. So it's mainly a Th2 disease. IL-4, IL-5, and IL-13 are the main players here. They're known to promote inflammation, tissue eosinophilia, and remodeling of the tissue itself. It's a disease treated with primary corticosteroids, which everybody knows, but we'll talk about what corticosteroids to use. And it's becoming more of a spectrum of disease rather than just something that you throw steroids at. And we'll talk about that at the very end of the talk. This, you're not expected to know, although it is in there. This is kind of the pathogenesis and the interleukin model for asthma. Again, you have your, where's that button? Perfect. You have your Th2 cell that differentiates, or Th0 cell that differentiates using these interleukins, and that's what I think that if I was writing a test question, that's what I would write on, is what does what in the body. But the interplay between the Th2 cells, B cells, and all these interleukins is eventually what causes this, and we'll go into more depth on that. So IL-4 and IL-13, they distinctly overlap. And when we talk about medications to treat this, you'll notice that the medication used to treat this is blockers for that. But they distinctly overlap in asthma. They're signaling through the IL-4 receptors, which are GATA-related transducers. IL-4 causes switching to IgE cell or IgE antibodies on B cells. So that's something that I would know for sure. So this is the reason, this is one of the big reasons why this is one of the reasons that asthma actually happens. IL-5 is a pro-eosinophilic interleukin. So this, again, binds to the alpha receptor of the IL-5. And promotes eosinophilia. That's a major player. We'll talk about that in rhinitis, why that's important. And then the IL-3, which I think is the mostly important one, because these cause problems, but this actually causes the most issue. So IL-13 actually promotes the hyper-responsiveness, so the wheezing, the shortness of breath and all that. That's where that's actually coming from. It also actually causes remodeling factors as well to be presented. So that's the big one that I would know. But usually IL-5 is associated with allergic disease, so that's probably one that I would memorize. Testing. So testing, basic testing for asthma. And the pulmonologists are going to get into this a lot more according to the syllabus, but we're just going to touch on this real quick. So peak flow devices and charts should be used in ages 4 and above. So this is all your adult patients to monitor their asthma control. Pulmonary function test, again, this is extremely abbreviated. You can probably talk a half an hour about pulmonary function test at least, but it's measured using forced vital capacities and forced expiratory volumes in the first second. So FEVC and FEV1 and the ratio between the two are the major players that you want to be able to understand and pull out of the STEM questions in order to figure out where they are. What are the new modalities? I don't know if this is going to make it on the boards or not. I'm not sure how far they are in terms of updating things, but there are new devices out there. One is called a fractional exhaled nitric oxide test, so a FeNO is what we abbreviate it as. So nitric oxide, you know, you hear on the radio, nitric oxide is good for this and that and that and that. But the issue is it's not good in the lungs, okay? So the higher the nitric oxide content in the lungs, the worse off your asthma is. So essentially, this nitric oxide is produced by cells as they get, as more and more inflammation occurs. And knowing where you fall on this, and again, I'm not endorsing anything. Niox is the people that make this, and you're giving out this chart, but Bosch and I think Panasonic, they all have a machine to do this. But this is essentially the current numbers that they use. So I doubt very highly that this will be on there, but just so that for your reference that this can be there. But just where low is, what high is, I mean, if they throw a question there, they have a low nitric oxide content that actually can tell you quite a bit, okay? So it's not inflammation, which means it's something else. So if ever I write a board question in the future, this is definitely something that would be on there. This helps you differentiate and gets rid of asthma completely, and then you have to know all these mimicking factors. So chronic cough, GERD, vocal cord dysfunction, bronchiectasis, all these other things are now major players, and asthma completely fell off. Even though the person comes in wheezing, coughing, shortness of breath, so on and so forth, it's not asthma, it's something else. So the problem is that we don't have long-term studies and we don't have reproducible data completely that's appreciated in the field yet to be able to say that this is a good question. So I doubt you're going to get it, but it is out there. So in terms of classification, so there's four age groups. Again, this is an adult class, so it's going to be 12 years and above. But you do have to know that there are three age groups that these charts fall under. And we're going to get to the charts that everybody's going to moan and say, oh, those, but you have to know them. So when you're talking about asthma, you want to start first by defining the severity, okay, to determine where the severity is on the scale in order to figure out where we start treating these patients. So again, these are the charts. These are the charts that everybody hates, but you have to know them. So what you want to do is kind of go through here and pull this apart. And I don't think you need to know them completely, but you need to know the big information off of them. So what is the big information? So you have four classes of asthma: intermittent, mild, moderate, and severe. Those are your classes. Impairment, you also have to know about the impairment. So different age groups have different impairments. So the ratio of the FEV1 to FVC changes between age groups. Younger people should have better lungs than older people. And as they get older and older, that ratio should drop. That's very important when making decisions on where to start. So defining intermediate, mild, moderate, and severe, you want to look at essentially four major clinical symptoms, which is the symptoms, the nighttime awakening, the use of their rescue medication, their short beta agonist, and their normal interference with their daily activities. So you want to look at those things to be able to classify them. Lung function is a test that you actually do, but that's not a clinical diagnosis. They're going to give that to you, but they're going to want to make you differentiate where the person sits using these clinical classifications. And the final thing down here, which they're not going to make it that easy on you, but for your clinical practice, the amount of corticosteroids the person actually uses in the year. So if they give that to you, it's almost a slam dunk, which means it's going to get harder through the question because that's way too easy to give them. And then depending on where they fall under these things is depending on where you actually treat. That's why you have to figure out where they are, if they're mild, if they're moderate, if they're severe, if they're intermittent, and then decide what type of agents you're going to use to actually start them out on. You can use tests. The ACT tests are tests that you can use clinically. So if they say a person has a very low test, essentially, is not good. So if they come in and they say ACT tests or something like that, lower is worse. And again, 19, I left this little blurb at the end here, 19 or less, that's a problem. Control. So control, severity is how you first initially approach the patient. Control is how you see them after they come in for a visit. So that's important because you have to, asthma is a dynamic disease, so you modulate all the time. So control. Again, it's mostly the same type of questions in terms of their symptoms, their nighttime awakenings, their interference with normal activity, their use of the short beta agonists as the clinical questions, and then you can continuously use FEV1, peak flow meters, or questionnaires to figure out where they are at that point in time. But they're classified a little bit differently rather than mild, moderate, severe, and intermittent. They're well-controlled, not well-controlled, and very poorly controlled. So we're going to go through there and figure this out using a couple cases. Depending on where their control factor is dependent on what you do with the patient. So treatment modalities. So again, we looked at the, if you look at the bottom, you have step one, step two, step three, step four, step five. That's essentially where you're gonna start and use this next set of charts. So step one is the use of a short-acting beta agonist, so essentially albuterol. Moving up a step, you're gonna use a low-dose inhaled corticosteroid. But the question is, it's not gonna be that easy. So they're gonna start throwing these alternatives in there, so that will most likely not be one of the questions. They'll give you something different. So will it be cromolyn? Will it be a leukotriene agent? Theophylline can also be used that almost nobody ever uses, but is actually coming back. And each step you do, you add another modality to this. So it's a stepwise process going up and a stepwise process going down. So step number three is using a low-dose inhaled corticosteroid plus a LABA, so a long-acting beta agonist, or a medium-dose inhaled corticosteroid. Again, alternatives, which most likely the questions are going to come from, is a low-dose inhaled corticosteroid, then either a leukotriene-modifying agent, theophylline or xylutin. Step four, again, you're going to go to your medium dose inhaled corticosteroid plus a LABA, so you're increasing your steroid concentration and keeping the long-acting beta agonist on board. Alternatives, you can use the medium dose inhaled corticosteroid by itself and then add on a leukotriene modifying agent, theophylline or xylutin. Step five, and you're at this point into very poorly controlled asthma, so you want to start using stronger medications, including high-dose inhaled corticosteroids, LABAs. You might consider other drugs that we're going to talk about, biologics. And at the very end, they're going to be on chronic steroids, which is not where you want to go. Each step of this of the way, they should have environmental controls assessed. And as you can see here in steps two through three, so as soon as you actually start here with mild persistent asthma going up, they should have an allergy evaluation done to see if there's any environmental issues. So in allergy land, environmental control trumps everything. Okay, so if you get a question sitting there saying, you know, what is the first approach to the patient? Medications, you know, inhaled corticosteroids, pills, whatever. It's always environmental control. So that is always the answer to that question. So we're going to do some practice cases. So unlike the other section that we just did, these are kind of integrated through to pull these things apart. Because I want to show you how these charts actually work. So if you understand that, it makes things a lot better. And I'll show you how to get through these. So in this case, we have a 62-year-old man with known asthma comes to your office for a checkup. He says he has coughing spells about once every week. So that's an important thing to underline right there is frequency, once every week, but doesn't have any nighttime symptoms. Again, that's another big key question right there is nighttime symptoms or activity limitations. So the question right there just told us three out of the four clinical indications of what's going on. He's only used albuterol two times since you saw him 4 months ago, so he's not using his short beta agonist, which is the fourth question right there. Only medication is albuterol, has no history of any systemic use of corticosteroids. So the office pulmonary function test shows essentially these numbers, and again, they're going to go through these again shortly, but those are good numbers. So essentially, what's going on with this patient? So in terms of severity, where would we classify this patient? Again, we'd probably say he's not having any terms of symptoms. He's not using any albuterol. He's not having any nocturnal awakenings. He's not having any interference with his daily activities. So essentially, he falls under the intermediate category. Now, the problem with this is they're not going to be that nice to you, so they will not give you this question. Okay, so they're not going to give you a healthy patient say, well, what classification is it? It's just way too easy. So, but that's how you pull these apart. So now it gets a little trickier. So that's an intermittent patient, okay? So it's a blatant intermittent patient. In terms of control, so remember, control is assessed each time they come into the actual visit. It's not during their first assessment, but if you assessed him during control using those using those factors that we just used. Again, he's not having any daytime symptoms, nighttime symptoms, rescue medications, use activities, and he's not using any corticosteroids. So essentially, his asthma is well controlled. So that's about the easiest patient you're going to get, and that won't do it. There, you're not going to get that one. In terms of what you should do with him, it would be a step one, correct? So he's not having any problems. If you look back to the treatment goals for him, again, he falls under a step one category, which would be just his beta agonist. So you'd do that, and you'd follow up in 6 months. Does that kind of all make sense? Yes? Okay. So that's the easiest one we're going to get. Case number two, a visibly fatigued 33-year-old mom comes rushing to your office with her 8-year-old boy. She's in a rush. She wants to get out of there. She's both her and her little boy are suffering from hay fever last month all day and all night. She says that last 2 weeks have been terrible. She just went to the urgent care and was given a dose of prednisone. So that's important. So she's having issues with running around. She's having issues with day and nighttime symptoms. Okay, so that's important. And she's also been given prednisone, so that's a steroid right there. Those are all important. The same thing happened last spring when this tree started to bloom. So you're showing there's some sort of environmental issue going on there. Okay, so if there's something else, the dog's, you know, getting after her. She goes out to the petting zoo and she has issues there. Something environmental is playing a key role here. She's actively wheezing on examination. So she's showing current symptoms. She's using her albuterol every night because she's coughing so much. Again, so we have nocturnal symptomatology and major use of albuterol. She says that her albuterol does help her cough. She's also going to need a refill on her albuterol because the last three that you gave her, she already went through. So she's blowing through albuterol like crazy, and there's a problem there. So you get a PFT on her, and you show her their ratios are significantly down. So those are all bad if you look at those at the ratios. So her current medications could be estimated from formoterol, 4.5, and her albuterol. So that's what she's currently doing. So in terms of classification, where is she going to fall? So her symptoms, what did she say? She says, I'm having symptoms all day, right? During the day, during the night. I can't get my kid around. I can't take him to soccer practice. So she's having issues throughout the day. She said, it's bothering me all night. It's bothering me all night, all week. So she's way out here, 7 days a week. She's using her short-acting beta agonist multiple times. She's already gone through three of them in a four-month or four-week period or whatever it was. She's blowing through albuterol like crazy. She's using it. And she's extremely limited. She's wheezing. She's actively wheezing on examination. So there's a problem there. Her FEVs and FEC ratios are down, as you can see. And actually, you can see that she actually did get a dose of prednisone. So that's an easy question, too, in terms of they won't give this to you. But if it's been two or more a year, it's automatically severe, mostly severe asthma. So she's kind of down at this end of the spectrum, correct? So, again, this is a severe asthmatic. Again, you're not going to get this question. So this is way too easy, okay? So they're not going to give you an intermittent, and they're probably not going to give you a severe unless they have multiple questions coming up afterwards. So this one's way too easy, but that's what a severe asthmatic looks like. So they're constantly going through all these medications all the time. In terms of control, daytime symptoms throughout the day, they're having all kinds of issues. So again, she's down at the very, 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 very poorly controlled symptomatology. Treatment, in terms of what treatment you should do. Here's where it becomes contentious in terms of what you can actually do, because you can actually go to step four or step five in the algorithm. So you can either, so in this case, what you can do is increase to medium dose inhaled corticosteroids along with her long acting beta agonist, follow up in 3 weeks and continue her rescue medications as needed. But the problem with it is it can be lots of different things, so they can pull all kinds of different combinations of medications there. So patient follows up 3 weeks after. She's feeling much better since the frost. She's no longer having any sleeping problems or issues, except when her dog sleeps with her at night. She's using albuterol about 2 times per week. No daily cough is reported, but still has 2 episodes per week. Increasing energy is also reported. Her PFT values have come up. So what is the plan? So this is the important thing, too, when we're talking about asthma control, is reassessment and decreasing the medications back to baseline. Okay, so I don't know if that was a question that I would write in there, because that is all over the guidelines, is decreasing medications to their lowest possible amounts. So when patient comes back in for reassessment and they're back to their baseline, reduce their medications. So get her off of the medications as soon as possible. And then because they're saying all this stuff about atopic and the season of the dog and all that stuff, you would also have her sent in for some sort of an evaluation. Okay, case number three. So this is where it gets important, okay? So they're not going to give you those two cases. They will not give you a very easy case of intermittent. They will not give you a very easy case or the severe case. They're going to give you the ones in the middle because they want you to know the rules of two, which we're going to go through here in a little bit. So a 26-year-old female comes into your clinic, complains about cough, shortness of breath occurring about once daily every week. Again, the frequency is important right there. With some activity limitations. She's noticed over the course of the year, she wakes about 3 to 4 times per month with similar symptoms. Again, she's having nocturnal symptomatology. She's borrowed her roommate's albuterol. After about 6 puffs, she feels better, which is over the normal dose, but she's feeling better from it. Roommate getting angry because she's using it before she goes out to work every day. So again, we're having daily symptomatology. Pulmonary function tests are right in the middle, So, so right in the middle, those are the main values you want to know. So in terms of classification, where does she classify? So she's having symptoms once in a while, twice a while. Yes? No? Any ideas? We like interaction. Moderate, perfect. Perfect, okay. So the issue is that in terms of when you, this is where the question's gonna come from, and because these two things are very, very similar. They want you to know the difference between a mild asthmatic and a moderate asthmatic, okay? So the big things you have to know here is the rules of two. And we'll get to that again at the very end of the presentation if I have time. But 2 days a week, okay, so that's 2 days a week. Less than 2 times per month, because if it's more than 2 times per month, it falls under the intermediate category. So again, less than 2 times per month. So greater than 2 days per week in terms of their symptomatology, less than 2 times per month in terms of their nocturnal awakening, greater than 2 days per week, but not daily. Again, 2, 2, 2, 2. And minor limitation, that one you just gotta memorize. But it's the rules of two. If you can memorize those numbers, you're gonna get every asthma question because that will be the differentiation between intermediate and a mild type of patient. Oops. In terms of her classification control, again, it's not well controlled. Again, it's the rules of two. If you memorize those, you're good to go. Treatment approach, again, once you figure out where they are in terms of their mild, moderate, or moderate, your mild, moderate, severe, you just put them in the step category they need. So in terms of her plan, you would start on inhaled corticosteroids, LABA, continue medications as necessary. Case number four. So a patient comes in to see you after having issues with asthma for many, many years. He's been having daily use of his albuterol. He's been put on mometasone and formoterol, high dosage, using 2 buffs twice a day. After review of his technique, everything is fine. He was also put on tiotropium bromide, 2 puffs every day. His symptoms will get much worse in the spring and the fall, and he'll go to the emergency room department for at least one of these sessions. His FEV1, FEVC ratio is extremely bad. What do you do next for this patient? So if you go back to the steps, he is already on, he's right here. So he's already on inhaled corticosteroids. He's already on long acting beta agonist. He's on medications. He's on a secondary inhaler. He's getting steroids. He's getting all these issues. So where do we go next? Because he's on maximum dose of medications, correct? Yes. I'm glad you asked. That pulls us into our second class of modality. So I don't know if these are going to be on there. I think they're going to start being on here because these have been on here long enough. So other control modalities. Number one is referral to allergy to start immunotherapy. I'm not going to go into great detail here because you don't need to know that for this. You just need to know that this option is available. So once they start having continuously seasonal symptoms, perennial symptoms while they're inside, the question of allergy immunotherapy is on the table. There's also a modality called bronchothermoplasty. I don't know if the pulmonologists are going to get into this more, but this is more of a pulmonary issue. But bronchothermoplasty was FDA approved in 2010, so this has been around long enough that it is a possibility that it might be on there. It's for 18-year-olds and above, so it is the adult age group that actually needs this. And what essentially they do is they take different lobes of the lungs. If you can see, they're marked out here in the bottom. Apologize. They're marked out here in the bottom, and they essentially put thermoplasty or thermoplasty, and essentially decay the muscles around the lungs themselves, so you don't have the bronchospasms. The trial was done, this AIR-2 trial, that should show improvement. So that is a modality that you can use. The modality that you guys are going to probably be tested on are biologics. Okay, so this is more of a medicine type of thing. The older biological medication, I call it older because it was the first one, is alizumab. So I don't know if I can say it, but Xolair is the trade name, but alizumab is the actual generic name of the drug. So what this is, a recombinant monoclonal it's an IgG molecule to IgE. That is essentially what it is. So it binds to IgE and it pulls it out of the system so it can't be used as a molecule. So an amazing test question would be something, the fact that, you know, you have this person that come in, what molecule makes IgE, that would be IL-5, and then what can you use to pull it out of the system? Alizumab. So essentially that would be a fantastic question if somebody comes up with that. That's essentially what you need to know. So this is just an IgE antibody. It's an injectable medication. Works pretty well. So you have this class switching. Alizumab binds to your IgE antibodies, prevents it from binding to B cells and so on and so forth. But this is something you need to know. Newer targeted approved therapies. So the newest models out, or the newest targeted therapies out there are to the actual IL-5 molecule. So they're just moving back a branch on the tree itself. There's currently three out there: molizumab, bertuzumab, and benurizumab, I believe it's called. Again, all these are targeted toward eosinophil counts and reducing their actual numbers. So metuzumab, again, you guys can read through this, but it's FDA approved. It's an injectable medication indicated for 12 and above. It's an IgG antibody that binds up IL-5, so it can't be used. And here's some of the trials that were done with it that actually showed that there was effectiveness with it. Rituximab is it's an IV form. It's kind of like a Ford and a Chevy, I guess. They're kind of the same thing. Some people like Ford, some people like Chevy. But essentially, it's the same medication, it's just going about it a very different way. So the only difference between this one is this is an IV administration. And the last one, bezuclastinib. And there's actually a typo here. It mechanism is actually destruction of cells. It doesn't block IL-5, but it's administration subcutaneously. You just need to know that these things exist. So if you have a mAb molecule on your exam, that's a biological medication. IL-13. Again, we talked about that at the very beginning. Running out of time here, but IL-13 essentially responsible for the airway hyperresponsiveness. That's what you need to know. IL-13 targeting, again, a mAb. You will not get a question. If you get a question on this, it would be blown out of the water, because we still don't know what molecule or what medication to use in certain situations. So there's no way that they can test you on this. You just need to know that if it's there, that's an option for you guys. IL-13, IL-4, again, this is that combination medication. Dulalumab, essentially it does this exact same thing. You have IL-4, IL-13, it binds these and it stops your STAT-JAK pathways from actually producing all these things down here, B cells, T cells, smooth muscle fibroblasts, so on and so forth. We don't need to know that. Let's see here. So just a few other things. I don't know if these are going to be on there or not, but these are all kind of some updates in terms of the guidelines haven't been updated since 2008. That's ancient. So you hear all these things come out in New England Journal, all the things. So I don't know if they're going to put that on there, but these are some things that actually popped up. Monolucast is not effective as an inhaled corticosteroid. So if you're going to pick a molecule or if you're going to pick a modality, pick an inhaled corticosteroid as your first acting factor, because monolucast it's not as effective, but it is. People will take it. They will take a pill, so they don't have to take a spray. So I don't think they're going to do that. But that's the monolucast is again not effective as LABA. Aerobic exercise is effective in terms of helping with asthma. Vitamin D deficiency, everybody should start being checked for this. I'm going to start checking for this more and more and more in terms of asthmatic prognosis. Macrolides might not be significant in terms of keeping airway control under control. Tiotropium bromide, so Spiriva, I don't know if I can say that or not, but tiotropium bromide can be added in place of LABAs for moderate to high dose inhaled corticosteroids if the patient's not controlled. So you have different modalities now. And ipratropium bromide can be used in the ED when they're still not getting a maximum effect from albuterol treatments. Let's see what else. The rules of two, again, I just spelled this out for you guys so you can go to one slide. You don't have to do this, but this will be on there. If this isn't on there, I'll be incredibly surprised. There's always an asthma question every year, and it's one of those questions where you have to answer it. You have to identify the thing first, and then they ask you the treatment, and then they ask you something else afterwards. It's usually a three-parter in terms of what it is. So if you get the first part wrong, you're going to get two wrong after that. So just know the rules of two, and boards are not friendly people or friendly things, so we'll always... It will be between, essentially, it will be between the two because it's easy to differentiate intermittent and it's very easy to differentiate severe. It's that middle two categories you got to be able to differentiate, and the rules of two will get you through that.